And here we are back for hour number two today, Thursday, September the 12th, 2019. 15 minutes past the hour here on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Quick programming notes. Don't forget the Charlie Evers Show live from 10:15 until 12 noon today. I believe he's going to have a lot of guests on regarding food and the big Wings and Wheels show today that are this weekend that's going to be taking place at the Marion Municipal Airport. Tuskegee Airman Dr. Harold Brown, one of the few remaining. This is a chance to meet a World War II veteran who was in a very unique branch of World War II. I think there are only maybe five Tuskegee Airmen alive in the United States, and Dr. Brown is in his 90s, and he's in good health, so this weekend would be a great chance to go out and see him at the Marion Municipal Airport, 8:30 a.m., I believe, through 4 o'clock on Saturday. But Charlie will be talking to some of the food vendors today. Yesterday, he had some of the people involved in putting the event together. Today's the food vendors, and I believe Dr. Harold Brown will be here tomorrow tentatively if he's not overworked in the morning from going to the schools and things of that nature. Progressive Life with Glenn Coble is live today, 12 to 1 p.m., and special guest tomorrow morning, live, 9:30 to 10 a.m. here on this show. But a special guest today, and we're so glad he's giving us this time because there is a lot to talk about, and he's always a great guest and in a new building here in Marion, out on Executive Drive, old Trekka building, old GTE building, whatever you want to call it. It is now the sheriff's offices here in Marion. Sheriff Tim Bailey. What do we call the building? Is it the Sheriff's Office, Sheriff's Station?
Actually, it's the Marion County Justice Center.
Oh, okay.
The Sheriff's Office is there. The City School Administration is there, as well as META. And there's some extra rooms. The two large rooms upstairs we use for training. But there's conversation about moving maybe some other county offices down there, consolidating offices in the county building. Nothing's been decided, and I don't think anything's going to be decided for a couple of years. But, there's potential for that building for future use.
Now that the 2018 election is over, we talked about the new judges in Marion County in 2018, took office 2019. You were involved in the prosecutor's race last time to the degree that Democrat who had endorsed Ray Grogan, the Republican, who went on to win that election. What's your relationship with Ray? How's that?
Oh, I think I have an excellent relationship with Ray and his staff. They do a good job. One of the things that the public may not understand is while he's called the prosecutor, he's also the attorney for the county. So he is my attorney. If I have some legal question, personnel issue, he's there. He calls me all the time. I pick up the phone, call him anytime. I have a great relationship with him.
One thing I want to talk about, and one thing that brought that to my mind, and I believe this is yesterday, but it may have, I saw the news release yesterday. This was a big thing for the Marion County Sheriff's Office and a big issue with the prosecutor's office. Sean Great, I don't think there's anybody in this area who doesn't know that name by now because of the news that went on, but there was a cold case here in Marion, I think that's what it's called.
Yes.
Where the woman was not identified for a long time. This is during your tenure.
Yes.
Can you take us from the beginning to the resolution this week of that?
Okay, well, the short story is on a Saturday afternoon, there was a gentleman that was out in the county on walking along the road, picking up cans, collecting cans, and he found the remains of a human, found the skull. Called us. We went up there. We researched the area, about a two-acre area. We found the remains of a female. There was nothing there other than the bones. There were no clothes, jewelry, purse, identification, or anything. And so we collected the bones. We did a DNA profile. Because we had the teeth, we were able to do the tooth profile. And that sent us on a 12-year hunt on trying to identify her. And we searched literally all over the world, Israel, Mexico, Canada, all over the United States, and we just could not get a name to this individual.
And nobody ever came looking for her?
No.
That's interesting.
She was never reported missing.
Wow.
And I'll tell you that part of the story. So, so Sean Great, who was a Marion resident, he went to River Valley High School. Somehow he ended up in the Ashland, Mansfield area. He had kidnapped some women up there. He killed them, became a serial killer. And when he was apprehended and they were finished interviewing him, and they were taking him back to his cell when he said, "By the way, I killed a woman in Marion." Well, the first call was to us. I sent detectives up there, and he was what appeared to be, he was very open, seemed to be very honest, very helpful. We had no idea how this woman had gotten there, who she was, or the circumstances around her death. Had he not told us that, that case would still probably be unsolved today. So as he told us the circumstances surrounding her death, that he had met her, she was selling magazines, he was mad at her, he took her to his house, he choked her, then he stabbed her, and then he took her body out to the Victory Road area and he burnt the body. We did not release the fact that the area and the body had been burnt. That was something we held close. When he told us that, that's when we felt like he's not just someone who read this in the newspaper, heard it on the news. He actually was there. So he went through the trials up there. We didn't feel like, and Marion, in conferring with the prosecutors, we were in no hurry to proceed with a case against him. He was incarcerated and not going anywhere. So we continued to try to identify her, just kept leading us to a dead end. And actually, I was sitting at home one evening trying to figure out what I was going to do next. And I'd been reading about this case in California. It was called the Golden State Killer. This guy was presumed to have killed people for the last 40-some years. And they used the DNA from the genealogy database. And I read about this, but I had no idea how to go about, where to go next. And I was sitting there thinking about this when the U.S. Marshal from the Northern District of Ohio, Pete Elliott, called me. And he said, "Hey, I heard about your case. Let me give you this lady's name, Dr. Fitzpatrick with the Doe Project. She's in California. Here's her number. Call her. She's been helpful with us. See what she can do." I'm like, okay, I'm on it. So I called her. And we sent her our DNA sample, and they worked on it, and they were able to identify our victim as Dana Lowry. She was from Louisiana. And they were able to do this because as people do these DNA kits from Ancestry.com or 123, 23andMe and these things, they get a profile back. They then can take those DNA profiles and enter it into a database and see who they're related to. Well, law enforcement has been accessing this database, and this our victim's aunt had done a DNA profile. So that's what led us to her name. Major Utley, my chief of detectives, and I went to Louisiana. We met with her live-in. She had two daughters there, and she had left him under circumstances. They were fighting, they were not getting along, and she left. But she called all the time. She called daily to the house to talk to the daughters, and she stopped calling. So that was 12 years ago, at that time, 12 years ago. And he felt maybe that something had happened to her, that she probably was dead. So when we showed up, and we didn't show up cold, this was all prepped ahead of time, he told us he thought she probably was dead. And they weren't related. And so let's say he's going to report her missing. Who do you report it to? The Louisiana State Police? She's not missing. She wasn't in Louisiana when she disappeared. So you report it to someone in Ohio. Ohio does not have a state police. The closest is each sheriff's office. So not knowing where she was missing, from where she was missing, who do you report it to? So he never reported her missing. So she was never in the national database, the FBI, the National Missing People database. That's why we didn't get a hit. And subsequently. He gave us some information, and then yesterday afternoon, Sean Great, he was charged, and he was charged earlier, but yesterday he went to court and he pled guilty on it.
We've heard his name so often because, as you've said, from Marion, went to River Valley, and has been charged in so many other cases. What's your impression of him?
So I know a little bit. I had never met him. In fact, I just saw him in court yesterday. But from what I gather from his childhood, his parents left he and his brother in their home alone to fend for themselves. But he was a good guy, got along with everyone. No one saw this side of him when he was back in high school. In fact, he said yesterday during the court hearing that he wished he had, when he killed the first, and Dana was the first woman that he killed, and when he killed her, he said, if I had come forward at that point, maybe this all would have changed and he wouldn't have killed the other women. And, you know, was he remorseful? I guess only he knows, but you could certainly put together from his past that this was very, very unusual for him to do this. And so, unfortunately, he's going to spend the rest of his life in prison. In fact, he's on death row. So,
is that, because we heard about this case a lot in the last few months, and even before that, before we knew her name, was that it? She was selling magazines, and somebody didn't buy them, or what?
Right. So she was working for a company, going door to door, selling magazines. Now you have to, you know, people today probably may not relate to with the internet that everything's on the internet, but back in the day, read magazines and books. And so she was with the company. She was with a group. There were seven or eight people. They would get in a van. They would drive to a city. They would spread out. They would sell the magazines, take orders, and then go to the next city and so forth. So the last time he, the live-in boyfriend, had heard from her, she was in the Akron area. And we were able to trace back through our records the times that that van had been stopped and the times that she had been interviewed by police, by law enforcement. So she sold magazines to Sean Great's mother, and they did not arrive. That irritated him to the point that when he saw Dana again, it went beyond irritation. He was mad. So somehow he got her into the car. He took her down to his house, and that's where he choked her. And then he stabbed her, all because the magazines were not delivered.
So. If it wasn't such a tragedy, it sounds insane.
I agree. Well, I agree.
I mean, it's an awful story. And when you, because when I hear a story like that, I mean, I'm no psychologist, but I think he can't be right. I mean, there's something wrong.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
And yet, if you look at him, he looks normal. And as you listen to him talk, you would not think he was anything other than just a normal John Doe on the street. He's very presentable.
This case, I don't want to say it was personal, but I mean, this was tracked for a long time. There were notices sent out. Does anybody know? Here's the weight. Here's the height. At one point, sketches and head things. And the whole bit was done on this. Paid off.
Well, some people say I'm stubborn, and that's probably where this thing was rooted. I was the sheriff when she was found, and I made it my goal to find out who she was. As I say, for 10 years, we had absolutely nothing to go on. But when Sean Gray gave us the name Dana, I was asked yesterday how many hours we put into this. I can't even begin to tell you, but we went into the BMV database and we pulled out the parameter using the name Dana, white female, this age group, and we pulled out a couple thousand names, and we went through every one of them. Nothing. He thought her name might have been Diane, so we repeated the same process and pulled out another 1,000 people and checked all those off made sure they were all alive and so forth. And he said, Diane, Dana, and he gave us another name that eludes me for the moment. But anyway, we repeated this process again. We got a tip from some people that bought some magazines. They said she was from Estonia. Hmm. Estonia is in Eastern Europe. It was part of the former USSR. And so we contacted our federal partners and asked, they have agents in countries all around the world, asked them to look into this, see if they could find something, and they looked in it for a couple of months and got nowhere. One of the problems we had was we got information that this girl was from, like, I think it was Utah, Salt Lake City, not Salt Lake City, Utah. So we called the agency and said, do you have a case? Do you have a missing person case on this? And they said, well, let us look. And then they would go through and they'd call us back and say, well, that case is in the archives in the warehouse. We have to go get it, go to the warehouse, pull it out. All the detectives retired. And then in a lot of cases, agencies didn't extract DNA from family members to put it in. So we ran into a lot of problems where cases were old, detectives had retired, bank records are destroyed after 7 years, so we couldn't get the check that the mother wrote for the magazines. And we located a company, and it actually turned out to be the company that she was working for, but the company was in Tennessee, and we asked for their personnel records. They were destroyed after 7 years. So that was the magic number, and we're in year number 10 trying to identify her. So we ran into a lot of roadblocks and stumbling blocks trying to identify her.
The people in Louisiana who knew her, what was their reaction to finally hearing that she had gone?
The family members?
Yeah. Never knowing for sure, I guess, that she was killed, but...
Yeah, there was the husband, or actually her live-in boyfriend, and two daughters. So we talked with the sheriff's office in Louisiana. They were extremely helpful. They were great working our way through this. So they actually knew the family, the detective did. So he prepped this. So when we showed up and we talked with the boyfriend and walked him through this and showed him the picture and told him that it was very emotional for him. The one daughter refused to come in. She didn't even want to acknowledge it. She didn't want to have anything to do with it. She wouldn't even come to the sheriff's office. The other daughter was, she was like, let's see, I'm doing the math wrong. I think she was 1 or 2 years old. So she really didn't remember her mother. So there was really no emotional ties. The daughter was helpful. She let us extract a DNA from her, which we sent into the lab and got a positive ID on her mother. That's how we actually finalized the case. But the boyfriend, he was upset. We offered to bring the family to Marion, offered to pay for their trip up here and house them and take care of them if they wanted to be present for the hearing yesterday, which they had a right to do, and they chose not to do that.
Being that this was just yesterday, something you worked on for more than a decade, when it finally came to resolution yesterday, what's that like?
Actually, more so when we submitted the DNA to the Doe Project, and we were waiting like 2 months, I kept asking my detective, do you have anything? Do you have anything? And she called me. I was in a meeting, and she says, call me right now. Well, I couldn't call her, so when I got back to the office and she told me the results, that the profile had come back to a girl named Dana, I was just ecstatic at that point. Yesterday was really more of a formality. Having worked this, 12 years, was really kind of anticlimactic yesterday, but identifying her was really awesome. And I'll share this with you. So in 1989, we found an individual in Flat Run Creek over in eastern end of Marion County. We've not been able to identify him. So we have followed the same case. We had DNA, and we're submitting it to the Doe Project. They have it, and we're waiting on a result from them. Hopefully, it would be nice if we could put a name to this individual. It's a male, white male, and identify him. We may not be able to find out how he died, but I sure would like to know who he is, and get him back to his family.
Being the sheriff, being in law enforcement for so long, does this stuff go home with you at night?
Sometimes. I've worked some cases that I just think over and over and over. I had one case where a woman died, and it was ruled a suicide, and I just can't get it out of my mind. You know, you watch TV and you see the detectives sit there and look at the reports over and over in the pictures, and I'd done that. I think, in my mind, I think she was murdered, but I cannot prove it. I can't go there. But, you know, I have to separate my job from my family and my home life and try to keep those split. And but there are some cases that I carry with me.
There are a couple things I want to talk about, because I've brought this up so many times on the program, and I think we talked about it a little bit last time. Your job is a job that you run for re-election for every 4 years, I believe it is, and you identify as a Democrat. Well, first of all, what makes you a Democrat, in your opinion?
Well, I think the Democrats are concerned about, I don't want to say the working person, but the everyday people. I've been asked to change parties to be a Republican. While I am a Democrat, and I've been a Democrat my entire life, I try not to play politics, and I try not to allow politics to enter into my job or my decisions. But I identify closer with the Democrats than anything else.
I ask you that because this is what we've talked about so many times. Since 2016, the Democratic Party's had a rough time in Marion County. City Council has become Republican. There has not been, since 2000, Democrats don't like me saying this, but there has not been a race since 2016 that a Democrat has run in, county or city, where they were not unopposed, that a Democrat has won, except you. That's it.
I'm honored.
Yeah. Well, why do you think that was? You did something right there.
When you figure it out, tell me. I mean, I'd like to think. I really don't have an answer. I know that in 1 year, I went in. I stayed within my budget. I don't do drugs. I don't abuse my wife. I don't cheat on my wife. I thought I made a lot of progress within the office. And when it came to election, I almost lost. When I thought I had done everything perfectly, if you had a checklist on things to do to get reelected, I met all of them and I almost lost. So it's more so about things like what you look like and what you say and how you sound than the job that you're doing. So when you ask me how I got elected, I'm not so sure how I got elected in a Republican world. Again, I'd like to think that honor, integrity, and treating people fairly, and not letting politics sway and play into the whole thing, I would hope that people recognize that and that's where it goes.
These are the only two political questions I'm going to ask you when it comes to this in this interview, but I think it's important because of the statistic that I just talked about, no Democrat winning in 4 years. And obviously there have been some good candidates. And last time, the only two Democrats on the ballot couldn't even crack 40%. Neither one of them, I believe, cracked 40%. So this will be a year that will tell a tale, I think, for the Democrats in a big way, this election coming up in 2019. You've endorsed candidates. You endorsed Ray Grogan. You've endorsed Democrats in the past. I think the sheriff's endorsement, the only person who's won an election as a Democrat, means something. Will you make an endorsement in the mayoral election?
Well, I think Scott Schertzer will win, hands down. I think he's done a good job. He is out there every day in the community. I've worked with him on issues. I think he'll win hands down. Talking about endorsement, I was asked, I've been asked multiple times. Most of the people that I endorse don't win, so I'm surprised they ask me anymore. But the MRDD, I wrote a letter endorsing their levy for this fall. I think it's important. I know some of their clients. I think they serve a purpose. I think sometimes they might have an image problem that they need to work on. But I think if you get down to the basics, they do a good job. They work with us well. They help us out and back and forth. So I've endorsed them on their levy.
The reason I asked the question about the mayor is for everything we've talked about. The fact that this will be Scott's fourth election, being that we do seem to have this, if he does win, it'll break the Democratic issue that we've been having for 4 years. Do you think this will be more difficult to win this time than his prior elections? Because the other ones, he's won by pretty substantial margins.
Well, I'm not so sure the climate has changed a little bit nationwide. My wife and I have a disagreement on this, but I am not a fan of Donald Trump. He couldn't be sheriff in Marion County based on his honor, integrity, and honesty and all that stuff. If I did that in Marion County, I would be indicted. So I have no respect for the individual, and I think the country was hoping for something out of him, and I think he gave them the honest, here's where I am, I'm moving forward. But I think that trend's moving back the other way. I don't see him winning, and I think maybe some Democrats will come out ahead next time.
Do you think the Democrats, this time it's city council, auditor, mayor, do you think they will fare better than the last 4 years?
The Democrats?
Yeah, the Democratic in Marion County.
I would hope so. I mean, Kelly Carr, she's been doing this job. We got elected the same year in 2004. She does a good job. The mayor does a good job. I don't want to say anything. I don't want to malign any of the Republicans up there. I appreciate the people that put their name on the ballot and come out and put their family and life on the line or their open, transparent family life on this. I appreciate that. But it's more than just putting your name on the ballot. You actually have to perform. You got to come out. You got to do things. And you've got to make some progress. And I'm not sure I see any progress out of the current council. I'm not sure where it's going. So,
what do you think happened 2 years ago, the current council?
Well, I think, I'm not so sure. I'm not sure I can analyze that. I know that people are fed up. The Democrats did not have a good presidential candidate. People did not like her, and while she had the popular vote, she lost. I think that carries through. I know on the Democratic side, we had all kinds of software, we had all kinds of plans and all this stuff, and people lost big. So you're asking me political. I'm not a political guru. Well, I'm a cop, and I try to do my best job as a cop and take care of the people of this community, and I hope they recognize it and for what it is.
Here's my last political, and it has to do with you, because you certainly at this point could retire if you would like to.
I could.
But we have this new sheriff's office, Justice Center, here on Executive Drive. This culmination in the Sean Great case, which was many, many years, decades old. Will you run again?
Yes.
You will?
Yes.
You've decided that?
Yes. I have not made a public announcement. I just did.
Just did.
Here. I have never left a project in the middle. And while we have moved into our new building, I don't see that being as completed till maybe even a couple of years from now. The move is not complete. The operation is not set up. I still have this case I just described of this individual that we haven't identified. I would like to see the entire sheriff's office operation moved under one roof. I still think I have things I can contribute. I still love the job. I like what I do. I've talked it over with my wife, and I'm going to run again.
Mm. In the internet age, even in the last 4 years since you've run last time, we've become more inundated with internet. We've become more inundated with how people run their campaigns, things changing all the times. Do you think it'll be more difficult this time? Not knowing who your opponent will be, of course, but do you think it'll be different than it was in 2016?
Yeah, I think it'll be run a little bit differently, and I'm not sure exactly what I mean by that, but yeah, I think it's going to be the internet. I think is fabulous. I think it's one of the greatest things that's come along since electricity. We use it all the time. It has enhanced our job at the sheriff's office. We can do a lot of things we couldn't do before, and then that flows over into the business sector and personal lives and so forth, and campaigns. So I use it. I used it the last time. I'm probably going to use it again.
In our last 14 minutes here, and as I say, I do appreciate the time. I saved this topic for a particular reason. We had a school shooting, or not a school shooting, we had a mass shooting in Dayton not too long ago. That's very close. We're having mass shootings all the time. As you said earlier on, we have officers at most of the county schools now. This has changed under your tenure as sheriff. How much does this worry you?
A lot. Very much. So following the shooting in Florida at Parkland School, particularly the information that came from the news media, and I know more about that than what I've read, but the fact that this individual that was involved in the shooting came to the attention of the sheriff and nothing was done, that bothered me a lot. So I went to all of the school boards, the superintendents, and we implemented into all of the schools in the county, including the city, an app that the kids can put on their phone and they can text us with information anonymously. So while we have a tip line that we share with the city police department, maybe on a robbery or a homicide or something, this is geared more towards the kids. So they can text us. And the people that see it are school administrators, and the school superintendent decides who's going to receive it within their organization, and it comes to the law enforcement. So if somebody says, well, Johnny's cheating on his test, that doesn't rise to the level for me to do something. But if I pick up something that somebody's going to harm someone, is going to shoot the school up, then we're going to act upon it. So we've gotten tips, certainly nothing to the magnitude of what took place in Parkland, Florida. But I think it's a tool that's out there. And what's really unique about this app is that the kids can send us information and it doesn't end there. We can converse with them. They remain anonymous. There is no way we can find out who they are, but kids give information, and they always have another question, and we can go back and forth. And pairing that with the fact that there are six school districts out in the county, outside the city. Five of them have now school resource officers. They're trained school resource officers. I think it's important. I think these are, besides our senior citizens, kids are the most vulnerable. We put them in a place, we congregate them, and then we don't protect them. That's wrong. I think it's, I remember years ago going into a school, I was asked to go pick up a kid. Parents couldn't go pick up the child. So I walked right in the front door, picked up this little blonde girl, and walked out, and no one stopped me and no one challenged me, and that bothered me from that day. Today, the schools are locked down. You have to identify yourself when you go in, and we're trying to ramp this up a little bit. I think it's moving in the right direction.
Everybody has, much like the drug issue changing over the last decade or so, what has changed? Why do we need this now?
I think it's, again, I'm not a psychologist, as we've just discussed. I think that some of the young people today were raised in an environment where they were not taught the result of losing. You have to lose sometimes to build character and change and move on. And when we tell everyone they're a winner, then when they do lose, you're talking about the most vulnerable of our young people, and maybe they can't handle it. That's my approach on it. I don't know. I really don't have an answer to it. Everybody has a gun. Everybody wants to carry a gun. We passed a law that people can carry guns concealed. Excuse me. And so it just seems like people want to solve the problem with the gun. They have to have a gun to bolster their bravado.
In Marion County, what is the job of the sheriff? How would you define your job?
So the sheriff is often identified with the police department and the highway patrol in a cruiser out there enforcing the law. The sheriff is a little bit different because the sheriff is an officer of the common police court. And so when the court needs something, they have the sheriff do it. So we pull the jurors that serve on the grand jury and on the petit jury. We serve subpoenas, we serve writs, we do sheriff sales, all of those things that go through the common pleas court. If the state taxation department, somebody doesn't pay their taxes, they have the sheriff do it. So there are a lot of administrative duties of the sheriff that the police and the highway patrol do not share. They're basically law enforcement agencies, while we serve other aspects of the community.
The sheriff's office, how busy does it stay? Is there ever a dull moment?
So I had a guy walk in. Actually, he was an attorney. He gets around. He gets around the state a lot. He said, every time I walk into the sheriff's office, I have to wait because they're busy. And not to malign the highway patrol or the others, because they do a great job. But he said, I could walk into the chief's office. I can't walk into the sheriff's office. They're always busy. And we did like 28,000 calls last year. There were 114 calls for service yesterday morning in the dispatch center. So
114
just in one morning. Last year we took 28,000 911 calls and 89,000 non-emergency calls just in the dispatch center. And of course, some of those flow over to the sheriff's office. That's police, fire, medic, and the sheriff. It's a busy place. It's a nonstop. It's again, we do fingerprint checks for people that want to be teachers, nurses, daycare workers. We register sex offenders. We register arsonists. We do investigations. We've partnered up with the police department and the prosecutor's office and BCI. We have a drug task force. We do a lot of undercover operations. So keeps us busy.
A lot of people ask this question who wouldn't have access to the information. Is Marion County, in your opinion, a safer place to live now than it was 20 years ago?
I don't think there's been any significant change. And I don't want to badmouth the media, but I've seen over 83 reporters come through this town. Some of them just do a great job. Some of them are here and for their own self-gratification. But I think we went through, while we do have a drug problem, we were always identified as having a bigger drug problem than the rest of the state or the rest of the nation. And that's not true. We tried to tell people over and over and over, the little town of Prospect and the little town of Tyro and all these places, they all have excuse me, suffering the same kind of issues in terms of some shootings that we've had downtown lately. I'm not sure what that's all about. I won't make my facetious remark, but the bar downtown where all the shootings, at least we know where they are, all the bad guys. But I think there's times that law enforcement has to step up and play hardball, and there's time to play softball.
You know, this has been an ongoing thing. Obviously, the media and law enforcement and so on and so forth. In Marion, what is today, what is the relationship? Because media is just less than it used to be.
Oh, it's, yeah. So with the internet, whenever we're working a case at the sheriff's office, and I'm sure the police department, if we roll up in front of a house, the neighbors are taking pictures of us, and they're putting it on the internet. And the local newspaper picks up on it, and as soon as they put it on the website, the TV stations in Columbus are calling. And this all can happen within 10 or 15 minutes. The communications is just unbelievable. I've had reporters call me at home about a case that the deputies haven't even stopped moving yet. They're on the scene, they're working. I haven't even gotten the call yet. So it's a fast-paced world right now. And is Marion any better or worse? I think Marion is on the upswing. I think it's improving a lot.
When we come and we look at this, I want to end here in our final 4 minutes, because the talk always is about the drugs. That is a common conversation everybody's having. And I always wondered this. When these pictures would surface of needles and parks and things like that, was that really happening?
Sure.
It was.
But it gets a lot of play. My neighbor called me, and she found in the tree lawn, she lives on a corner, she found a needle. Somebody had driven by and thrown it out. It does happen. You find them in restrooms, you find them in business restrooms, and in parks. I wouldn't, if you're going to pick it up, I'd use a glove, because some of this stuff can be very, can be fatal. I put it in a bag, and we'll take it, and we'll dispose of it. So it does happen.
Is it tremendously hard to combat?
Which part?
The drug issue.
Well, so heroin is not grown in Marion County. It comes from outside the United States. And I've talked a bit before about, I've had briefings from the Coast Guard about how these individuals in South America have homemade submarines, pack it full of drugs. They take fishing trawlers, dump everything out, put 55-gallon drums of fuel, and the submarine goes up the coast and refuels. And I mean, that's hard to combat. That's up to the Coast Guard and the Border Patrol, and it slides into this country. Heroin is on its way down. We are seeing this from our partners across the state and the nation. Heroin's going down. Cocaine is still out there, but meth's coming back up.
And again, before we part ways here, I think it's important to mention this again. Marion County, because I've even heard mayoral candidates make this statement, that it's worse here than anywhere else.
No.
In the grand scheme of Ohio, where are we? Are we same as everybody else, a little?
Well, we had some pill mills, which where a lot of this started. Every day, people that had a back injury would go to the doctor, and then they would give these oxycodone and these drugs, and then not wean them off of it, and then they would go out to a street person and buy it. So are we any worse than anywhere else? I don't think so. I think it's all over. It is diminishing to some degree. I think things are getting better.
It's a good thing. And again, let people know if they want to come to the Justice Center, where is that now and what is housed there?
So the address is 100 Executive Drive. It's on facing Delaware Avenue. It's in front of the Ohio Health Hospital, in front of Doctors Park, across from the Harding Memorial. We're there 8 to 4 every day. Obviously, we're open 24/7 if you need anything. If it's an emergency, dial 911. We're moving in. I would hope to have, once I get the construction done and the build-out done, I plan on having an open house. The Chamber's offered their ambassador club to come down and cut the ribbon. So maybe in a couple months we'll have you down and give everybody a tour.
That'd be a lot of fun. Sheriff Tim Bailey spending the morning with us 2 hours, and we certainly appreciate that, talking about the new Justice Center on Executive Drive here in Marion, in the old, well, I guess Meadow Solutions is still there,
right,
but
right.
The old Treca building, old GTE building, and it's a great place for the sheriff and his staff to be.
Thank you for having me. It's been my pleasure.
It's always a pleasure. Lots of interesting stuff. Charlie Evers coming up in about 10 minutes. Stay tuned.
When you were on, I made sure to tape it.
Well, isn't that something? Where are you from?
from originally?